This is exactly right.
Hi, I'm Erin Welsh.
And I'm Erin Alman Updike, and we're the hosts of This Podcast Will Kill You on Exactly Right.
We're back with our seventh season, which is bigger and better than ever.
Because guess what? We're now a weekly show.
This season, we're tackling everything from long COVID to norovirus, from the supplement industry to IVF, and so, so much more.
New episodes drop every single Tuesday.
Follow This Podcast Will Kill You wherever you get your podcasts. Murder.
Hi, welcome to My Favorite Murder.
Hello. Welcome to My Favorite Murder.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello. Gotta learn how to start this thing someday.
What was wrong with that? Really creepy, unnatural speaking voice. It was too light. It was kind of like when someone says they'll scratch your back, but then they just kind of just lightly drag their hand across your back.
No, don't touch
What
me.
Is worse than that?
You know what's worse than that is when those blankets that when your heel, it's like your heel's a little dry and it rubs across those like woolly blankets or like gets caught on a cuticle.
Like you're a fucking goat. Like you're so not, you're so disgusting that like blankets
Here's
are
how
like.
How long it's been since you fucking taken care of yourself.
Hey, Miss Havisham, why don't you fucking soak these feet?
Yeah, that.
Also, you know what's worse?
What?
When a guy puts his head on your shoulder.
What?
Oh,
why?
Ew.
Are you serious?
Isn't that the grossest thing of all time?
I don't understand that one.
I don't know. I just hate it.
Wow. That was so amazing.
I really thought you were going to be with me on that one.
I don't get it.
I don't know. It's like to be cute or something.
Where it's like, can you not be precious?
Like a guy doing that is like,
well, because you also like a masculine dude who takes care of you, and a guy who fucking puts his head on your stupid shoulder is like,
I mean, it's just a little like they might as well also kick their outside leg up
when they kiss you
and like pull their skirt out a little bit. What the hell?
I'm fine with that, but you know it's even grosser. When you don't have a garbage disposal and you have to take the food out of the fucking, the wet food out of the drain of the sink.
I don't know what you're talking about.
How dare you?
That's how it feels to be abandoned.
No, it just made me like, I
wait, did you have to do that by hand and then throw it in the garbage?
Yes. And it makes me sick to my stomach.
How old is the food? Days? Weeks?
No, it's just like you just did the dishes.
Mm. Okay. But
and
you
it's
don't...
like food from your mouth.
You're not a soaker though? Because I'll go ahead and I'll soak some dishes for a good 2 weeks. Do you ever do that where you're like, I'm cleaning them by letting them sit in the sink with soapy water in them?
Yeah, I'll put some cold water in a bowl of like yogurt, and that's never gonna
work.
It's
always yogurt
or like cereal, and it's like it's still gonna get stuck to the bowl every time.
Yes,
like the thing that we'd yell in my house is put water in it.
Yeah.
It's like nobody knows. We lived in that house. I lived there for 16 years, and the dishwasher never worked a single day that I lived there.
Where? Not the other apartment.
In the house I grew up in.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. So you always had to do everything by hand.
Yeah.
And so when people would almost willfully, ignorantly leave a bowl of cereal in the sink, knowing full well it was just going to then be cemented onto the side of that bowl.
Right. And you'd get yelled at and have to do it.
Yeah.
And then you'd have to take your fucking hand and take all the wet food out.
Wait, you have a garbage disposal now, don't you?
Now I do, yeah. Like, that's, now I do now.
You must run that thing all day long.
Oh, love it.
Just for no reason.
On, all day.
Just creating kind of a nice white noise in the background.
It's so comforting.
You know what I hate?
Tell me.
Is when you're like taking a shower and you're just like, oh, it's so great to get clean. And you look down, there's like straight up black mold in your shower. Ooh. Or something like where you... the thing of like, you don't notice how filthy you are until you look at one thing and then you're like, oh my God, that's not like grout. That's not black grout. No. The grout is white.
If someone else saw this who was a clean person.
Yes.
Well, right now in my shower, I hope you didn't see that when you just peed, is that like there's leg shavings everywhere. Because I just now, like this is the first time I've had a white shower.
Yep.
Because our last one was like gray. And pink, like vintage gray and pink.
Sure.
And you can't see that shit on gray.
No.
But now it's all white.
And now
it's
just you have like to look at your own body.
Leg shavings.
Offerings.
I wonder if Vince notices this too.
I mean, he must be into it. My sister, when she came down, because she is a super clean type A type person, and I am not. Mm-hmm. My sister got crazy bummed because I have the drain in my bathtub.
Where your hair gets caught in it?
It gets caught. There's no like secondary screen. Yeah. I wouldn't be able to find one because it's just, there isn't one.
Yeah.
So it's always backing up. And my sister was so bummed at the amount of water because it was like.
No, I get it.
Yeah.
And then like I was just standing like, water.
You're right. That is gross. But I've never noticed. It's just how it is.
Like standing water.
Standing water.
I don't like that either.
While because then. Showering. It is gross.
It's gross. And then. The leg shavings are like getting attached to your ankles.
Basically. That's right. And also they stay when the rest of it drains because it drains so slow.
Yeah.
Then it creates its own kind of like, it looks like a map, like a topological map of a river basin.
Look at yourself.
Can
I bring this back around?
Sure.
However, it does make your feet nice and soft when they're soaking in the water there.
It sure does.
And then they won't rub on a blanket.
And make you
feel like shit.
And scrapey.
Anyways, that's been my favorite murder. Can you imagine someone who's listening for the first time? They're like, what the
fuck? They're just like, I saw this.
I came in here for decapitated head.
This was on a murder list, and it certainly is no murder.
This is my favorite murder.
Really quick, time my dad said to me, he came down to visit me, and then the thing broke in my toilet and he had to go in and fix the stopper, whatever it is.
Oh, I hate that.
And while we were standing in there, he goes, hey, why don't you spend some quiet Sunday cleaning behind this toilet?
Holy shit.
And the level of total disgust that he said it with, I think of it every time I'm in the bathroom by myself.
That is an extra level of being condescending. He couldn't just say, hey, you should clean the back of your toilet.
Oh, no. It always has to be like a one-man show in our family. Spend some quiet Sunday cleaning behind this toilet.
I don't know, Dad, because I'm busy going to therapy to get over you.
Hey, or maybe because I just party.
Yeah, I'm maybe because I have a fucking life.
I love to be outside where the toilet isn't.
Yeah, because I have friends.
I don't like the toilet as much as you do, Dad. What am I saying now?
Because it's not as, because you know what's important to me, Dad? Living my life.
And if that means having a filthy toilet, so be it.
So be it. You know whose problem that isn't? Mine.
Welcome to my favorite murder. It's a murder podcast for murder aficionados.
Only murder. People who are into murder.
So much murder.
That's
and
it.
Crime. God, that we're all about it.
Justice.
Oh, that's us.
Totally.
America.
That's Karen Kilgareth.
That's Georgia Hardstark.
Hi.
We're here to host this show. And sometimes we talk about personal stuff.
We do. Totally.
I don't know if you...
Was that even personal? That was just like...
I don't know.
Every day. I met a guy today who works in a morgue. He's going to work in a morgue and is going to morgue person school.
Yes. Where?
We went to lunch today and I got so excited. I had this incredible therapy appointment that like made life sunnier. Then I go to the restaurant that we were going to meet at. It's Jones on 3rd. It's not like we go there every day. It doesn't matter.
It's great. Everybody goes there. It's a great place to eat in Studio City.
Well, the guy who's ringing me up for my coffee was like, how's your day going? And I'm like, good, thanks. How's yours? And he's like, great. I had a job interview. I'm like, oh, Jesus, fucking guy's talking to me now. I'm like, oh, you're like being polite. Oh, what was it for? And then he was like, oh, at the LA County morgue. And I was like, what? What the fuck?
Do you think he knew?
No.
Oh, I love that so much.
He just told, like, he didn't know how I would react. And of course, I grab him by the arm.
Did you really?
Yes.
Across the counter.
Oh, my God. Tell me everything. And he was like, oh, you know, blah, blah, blah. I'm going to school to be... mortician, something like that. And
exactly
like I was like, that's amazing. You're in the right, LA is going to be incredible. And he's like, I know,
the murder in the right place.
Well, I said, this is, LA is going to be a great place to do that. And he said, I know, the murder count just keeps going up.
That's right.
He said that. And then I turn around and this girl came up to me and was like, hi, I really like the podcast. This is weird. My grandfather is a serial killer.
No.
Literally moments later.
Okay. That's when I walked in.
Yeah.
Okay, so I have the bad habit of my sunglasses are also prescription. So when I come in from outside and my sunglasses are always on my head, which means I can't see.
I always forget that you can't see anything.
Yeah, I can't see. Well, like I can't see past like a couple feet in front of me.
Yeah.
So like, and it helps me because walking into a place like that, right. Jones on Third is very like see and be seen type of place.
Whom's whom.
And I always get real insecure, whatever. So I'm like, oh, good. Better that I don't have my glasses on. Except for reading menus and seeing where Georgia's sitting and all the things that actually involve meeting someone for lunch.
I saw you, but I was in the middle of this discussion with this girl, Anna.
But also, I didn't realize, like, I thought you'd be sitting by yourself. So when this kind of one blurry figure waved an arm, I was like, what the hell's going on that I have to go over here now? And I walk up and Georgia is in full on, like, kind of don't interrupt us conversation.
No, what I was saying is, don't tell Karen, don't tell Karen, don't tell Karen. When she walks over, so you don't tell Karen.
Yeah. So wait, you're going to tell me right now?
Yeah. He was a fucking serial killer. He's in prison. He was like the sheriff in Bakersfield and he was killing sex workers.
No.
And she didn't know till she was older. And then she saw an episode of like Forensic Files and was like, that's my grandfather. Like she always knew he was in prison, but didn't know what the deal was.
Hold on.
I know.
Was that in like the 80s or 90s?
She was like 11, I guess. And she looked in her early 20s.
Yeah. She was pretty young.
Looking. Yeah.
That is so intense.
I know. So I was like, this is Anna. Bye. Bye, Anna. I was like, get the
get fuck out, away. Anna. I can't. Get out, Anna.
Because I can't keep a secret. I'm like, not good at that. So I didn't want to be like, tell
That's
you.
So good.
Her name is Nice Goats on Twitter.
Nice Goats.
His name is David Keith Rogers. She said her grandmother wrote him a letter every single day, called him every Sunday, despite the fact that he was a serial killer.
Denial. That's some serious denial. She's like, that's not the man I married.
No.
Well, talk about living a double life. He's the sheriff. And that is a nightmare.
Awful.
That's a True Detective.
Yeah.
Season.
All of them.
Never.
Because it'll never
gonna happen.
Can I say one other thing?
Yes.
That I love?
Yes.
I'm listening to another new podcast that I finished within a couple of days, as I do, called In the Dark, the Jacob Wetterling one.
Oh, no, I haven't heard it.
Well, I was like, Jacob Wetterling, everyone knows what happened with him. He's a kid who got kidnapped, you know, in Minnesota in the 80s, whatever. And so I was like, I'll just listen to an episode. It is fucking enthralling. It is one of the best fucking investigative journalistic podcasty things I've ever listen to.
I gotta listen to
it. It's incredible. And it's not about Jacob Wetterling. It's about everything that went wrong it is a fucking hard look at law enforcement.
Wow.
And how they mishandled the entire fucking case. Shit. And how it fueled stranger danger and the sex offender registries and is that the right thing to do? And like, it's, and then they just solved the case like a week before they were gonna put the podcast out.
Whoa.
So they like tie all this shit into it.
Wow. Oh, I got to listen to that.
Madeline Barron is the host. I love that it's all these fucking badass women who are hosting these incredible investigative journalism pieces.
So cool. In the Dark, it's called?
In the Dark.
In the Dark.
I could not stop listening to it.
Ooh, I love that.
It's great.
I actually just thought of this too because I just watched if you're not watching Vanity Fair Confidential, which is a series
on a place?
What?
Which part do you not know?
I'm just trying to think of where it is. But it might be Investigation Discovery or something. It doesn't matter. You can just put it in. But they basically go over stories that have been in Vanity Fair, which is a magazine that's existed for like 70 plus years, maybe longer.
It does great art, great
investigative pieces. Journalism. Yeah. Yeah. And the one that I watched yesterday was about this couple, which was basically about Satanic Panic and that weird thing that happened in the 80s where all of a sudden it was like at the McMartin
preschool
yeah. case. And then there was this other one that happened to these people in Austin, Texas,
yeah.
and they just got out of jail and they still haven't been exonerated.
Are you fucking kidding me?
They were just released of like the, it's basically what you were just talking about, where back then when they knew nothing about how much you could screw up an interview with a 4-year right. old or a 3-year right. old, how easy it is to get that child to say exactly what you want them to say.
Totally.
And that's how all those things exploded. That's why it happened all at the same time.
That's amazing. That shit, that is what fucking happens in this podcast. And it is incredible how it's so terrifying. Like, I have to listen to a positive book now because I'm so fucked up over it.
Yeah. Oh, I gotta listen to that.
And Vanity Fair Confidential, what's cool is that they take those articles and they interview, like, the main narrator interviewer guy is the person who wrote that article.
Yes.
I love that.
And then then the police right. that were there and the other family members and right. stuff. They've been, the last couple that I've watched have been so good. It's just like, it's a really well done series.
I haven't watched it in a while. I'm gonna check it out.
Yeah, it's good.
Cool. Also, did you see the thing? Someone tweeted at us, or it was somewhere, like, I think it was on our Facebook, about the windshield wiper shirt
yes.
trick.
Yes.
Do you think that's true?
I mean, it could have like its sources in some once yeah. true thing, but I like the idea that people spread that around.
Me too.
Because I think it's that thing of just like eyes open. Yeah. Eyes open and don't like. So basically what it was is there is a picture, I think it was either on Instagram or Twitter or yeah. whatever, but it's like a girl, there's a shirt wrapped around her windshield wiper, and then when she gets out to take it off, there's right. people there that are like to grab her because right. she's out of her car.
Right. You get in your car at night, you're being very careful in the structure, and then, oh shit, there's something on my windshield, I better get out and take it off.
Yeah.
And then that's when your guard is down.
Yes. So it's just the idea, and that thing spread like wildfire.
Yeah.
I saw that on a couple different places.
Oh, really? Yeah, I was like, this sounds like, you know, and his hook was in the car or whatever, yes. the back door. But it is, yeah, it is a good kind of reminder to pay attention.
Yes. It only takes one thing like that.
Yeah.
And also you have to think, if you're like, you should think of your car as like the safe zone. So like once you're in there and you've locked that door, mm-hmm. you're good to go. Mm-hmm. So if you can drive with a shirt on your windshield wiper, right. get the fuck out of there.
And that's what the girl said she did, is she fucking knew something was wrong. She saw a car idling, supposedly, you know, and then so she fucking drove away. And when she was alone and safe, she fucking got out and pulled the
yeah.
thing off. She's like, it didn't make sense that it was wrapped around my windshield.
Right. Yeah, it doesn't. Because it's not like, oh, it dropped from... You know, right. it blew onto my windshield right. or whatever. If it's wrapped. She was basically taking her context clues and going, this is a red flag situation.
Betcha this fictitious character is a murderino.
Bet she is.
Betcha.
What else?
I mean.
Do we have anything to report back from? And I would just say this. Because we haven't recorded since our tour, right?
Right. Last episode was our... where were we? Our Oakland show. The last okay. episode we put on this podcast was the Oakland show.
This podcast, this one right now,
yeah,
was Live Oakland.
Yeah.
After Live Oakland, we met a bunch of great people. And the first person we met was a girl who made us some amazing stuff. I don't have her card or anything, but did you see in that bag, and I'm not sure if you went through it, so I got a tote bag that said, my dogs are fiercely private.
Oh, and she got me a bag that had a fucking adorable Siamese cat on it.
Yes.
That I'm totally using all the time now.
Yep. And also, I think handmade, I don't know if she bought them or if she designed them herself, but I feel like she made them. The Barb notebook, did you get a Barb notebook?
Yes.
Yes. I think that's her drawing.
That is amazing.
So we just want, we had a fun conversation with you. She was very excited. And we just wanted to say it was just as fun for us to meet you as it was for you to meet us. Cause she was very sweet and yeah. very excited.
We're so lucky.
Yes. We get lots of nice presents and it's funny. And also in Oakland, most of my family was there. My cousin Stevie, who's basically like my older brother, who beat me up my whole childhood and then became a super cool friend and now is basically like my sister, and my sister's family and his family like do everything together, and it's really awesome because that's the way we all grew up together. It's like the next generation. I heard the rumor that he was crying during our show
because
he was so proud and like blown away. Like basically all of my family was like, oh, we had no idea that this is what you were doing.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So it was super fun.
Well, Marty fucking Hardstark is going to be at our Beacon, our New York Beacon show this fucking weekend. And I have no idea how he's going to react.
Please, New York, help us impress Marty Hardstark. He needs to understand that his daughter has done a good job.
You'll know him by the fact that he's the only grown man alone there.
That's not true. When we were in Seattle, remember the guy that made us the macarons?
Oh, yeah.
He like had taken, Steven, he had taken a cooking class. Mm-hmm. He had made macarons that had, they were pink with red blood spatter on them, put them in a Tupperware and brought them to the show.
Yeah. And we knew they weren't poisonous because a girl in line behind us, him, had eaten them. And she was like, they were great. And we're like, how do you feel? Are you feeling okay? She's like, I'm fine.
You're awesome. Like our tester.
I love macarons. And I got Ted Bundy cookies.
Oh my God.
Oh shit.
Wow.
I just said the wrong word.
Oh Jesus.
Did you see that?
Elvis just came out of his little cat house. Okay.
Because I said the word
cookie.
He knows.
Holy shit. He's going to have to get one early.
He is a monster.
We've made a monster. Sod House Bakery in Seattle are the ones that made us. I tweeted those.
Yeah, they're on our My Favorite Murder Instagram, too.
Unbelievable Ted Bundy. And I would just like to point out the fact that it turns into a thing where it looks like, oh, we love Ted Bundy. In no way, it's like, it's the story we're telling, and it's...
Oh, I never thought that.
I'm not saying to you. I'm just saying in general.
Okay.
When on the podcast, people are like, it sounds like we're cheering. It's not about Ted Bundy.
It's the fascination of... the story.
And the crime. And the fact that that exists.
And the icing.
And the fucking... That was an amazing cookie.
It was like a brown sugar cookie.
It was crazy.
It was really good.
Beautiful art. And the shape of... Washington?
Washington, probably. Because we're in Seattle. It was the shape of Washington. We are the best people. We are the...
Oregon!
Can I talk about how I took a bite out of it to take a photo and like it seemed obvious that it was a cookie? And then I said, look, I took a bite out of crime. And then I fucking laughed my ass off at my own fucking stupid joke.
God, it gets lonely in that dressing room.
Ooh, it's quiet. We don't have groupies.
That's the place where I put on a record, right. And it was some lame 80s, not lame, there were some good songs on it, but there was an 80s compilation, and a Styx song came on, and it was dead silent. Me and Georgia are like looking down at our murders or whatever, like getting ready, and then she goes, oh my God, what is this? She's not even a good singer. And I'm still laughing about that. Very enjoyable.
I didn't know Styx. You look like it's your turn to go first.
Is it?
I don't know. You looked like you were ready. And I was like, oh, she knows.
Well, then I'm interpreting from that you would like me to go first.
Oh, I don't care. I don't want to fuck it up. I bet Steven knows.
Well, we fucked it up going live.
Oh.
Steven, do you know?
No.
Did you see him pick up his finger like he was trying to shush us?
He was thinking. No, I think he was thinking.
I was like trying to remember. And I was just
shush.
Like.
And you brought the microphone up so perfectly. Like, I'm about to tell you.
Well, I also was like, does it count from the Oakland episode, or do you count the other live episodes in terms of who goes first?
Oh, no, then it's me, because...
I think Oakland.
Oakland. So it is me.
Okay.
All right.
Whatever.
Well, this is... Now I'm afraid, because I'm 99% positive you haven't done this murder, but truly, as I was printing it up and leaving my house, I was like...
This sounds...
It's so familiar. And I know that I've done research on it before, thinking I would do it before...
Well, I've had to think about looking up murders before, being like, have I done it before? Not just you.
Okay.
So I think we're...
So you won't be mad if this is a repeat?
Only if you do it better than I did.
Well, I'm pretty sure you didn't, but I know we've talked about it.
Okay, I'm excited.
And the reason that I wanted to do it is because I mentioned it the last...
Just pick the biggest one. Sorry, like in your face.
No problem.
Okay.
The last... I think the last studio recording that we did, when I talked about the Pepin sisters, the French maids that killed
apartment.
Yes, yeah. this podcasting studio. Right. So it's another case of folie à deux, which is the shared psychosis, and it's the story of Ursula and Sabina Erickson.
I have not done it. Oh, we've talked about it.
Yes.
I fucking am excited about this.
Okay, good. All right. What a huge goddamn relief. Because I was truly like, I'm printing it. This is what I've done. Like, I can't go back from here.
What if that's like my trigger and then I'm like, this is over? I can't believe you don't remember. I cried that episode.
Yeah, it meant a lot to me too. Anyway. All right.
Okay.
So, in that, sorry, if you didn't hear that episode. So, a folie à deux is in French, it translates as the madness of two, and it's a form of shared psychosis between two people who are extremely close. Mm-hmm. The Pepin sisters were an older and younger sister. It is rumored that they were having a sexual relationship, but they did work for a rumored to be very strict mistress who they killed so violently that it beats most of the crimes we talk about modern day.
It doesn't fit with what, you know what I mean? No. Crime not matching the punishment and all this.
Yes, it's such extreme overkill that it's nutso bizarre.
Totally.
So this is a little bit different, but this I feel like is the much more famous version of this shared psychosis. And it is Ursula and Sabina Erickson. So in May of 2008, two Swedish sisters who live in Ireland, who are in their late 30s, named Ursula and Sabina Erickson, twin sisters, that should be in there. They are twin sisters, and they live in County Cork, and they've traveled to, they're traveling to London, but they've taken, they're in Liverpool when this all goes down, taking the bus into London, or they're right outside Liverpool, I guess. So when they first arrive in Liverpool or wherever they are nearby it, the first thing they do is they walk into the St. Anne Street police station and quote unquote report concerns about Sabine's children. So from the get-go of their like trip to London, there's shit going on. They immediately go and start talking to the police. Nothing comes of it. They get on this bus, the National Express coach, into London. After a little while on the bus, they tell the driver they don't feel well. He pulls over to the roadside services, and they get off the bus. When they try to get back on the bus, they are clutching these bags that they have with them in a way that makes the driver suspicious. Mm-hmm. So he says, "We need to look in your bags before you get back on the bus." And they're like, "No fucking way." And they're so weird about not letting anybody look into their bags that the bus driver kicks them off the bus and leaves them there.
Fucking hero. Oh wait, that's kind of shitty. Don't leave women on the side of the road.
But. Well, but I mean, like, so the second I hear this, I'm like, what is in those bags?
Totally.
I need to know what's in those bags immediately.
Oh, yes, I'm imagining lots.
Right. So the gas station manager, where they have stopped at these, what they call services in England, is informed by this bus driver, these two are acting weird and shady, and so I'm not letting them back on the bus. So that gas station manager calls the police. Mm-hmm. They come and talk to Ursula and Sabine, decide they're harmless, and leave. Mm-mm. So now Ursula and Sabine are stranded by the M6, which is a freeway in England. And not the TV show MI6, which I thought I was thinking of the whole time I first started researching this.
Love it.
Have you ever watched MI6?
Nope.
With Matthew McFadden, who is Mr. Darcy, Richard Armitage. Anyway.
None of it. I'm sorry.
Good stuff. Good stuff. Good British procedural.
Good talk.
But there's an M6 and then there's an MI6. Okay. They're not the same thing, Karen. Okay. So they're stranded, and the next thing that they know is that there's CCTV footage of them walking down the central part of the freeway.
Like the...
So they have run across...
The center median.
Yes. They've run across the freeway. So you can see... Here's the insane part of all this. There is video footage of this entire incident.
I've seen it, and it's like, whenever there's CCTV footage, I'm like, don't want to watch this. Something awful is going to happen.
Yes, that's bad too. But there was also basically a British version of Cops, which was called Motorway.
No.
Yes.
Is it accidents?
Motorway Cops.
Oh, fuck,
which was a reality show that they were filming when this happened. So the entire thing is caught on an ENG crew footage. Yes, like a TV show. That's why there's so much, like, you can see all of it.
That seems illegal.
It's super crazy. Yeah, because did they sign waivers?
Totally.
There must be, because they broke the law, they must not have to or something.
Sure.
So basically, here's what, or maybe they have different rules there of production. All right. Here's what happened. They're in the central median, and they run to cross it again.
Don't cross the fucking freeway.
Ursula gets across, but Sabina gets hit by a car.
Oh my God.
So they call the highway agency traffic officers, which I imagine is like the highway patrol.
Sure.
But I don't know, and I didn't look it up. I wrote this horrible thing. So when highway agency traffic officers, what I can only imagine are the British Highway Patrol, so British chips, which in America are crisps,
but in
England are French fries.
I love where you went with that. That was
so
unexpected.
Dumb. So dumb.
So like fish and chips. What if there was like a cop show that the cops were British and there's a guy named like Andy Fish. And so it's like fish and chips. Can someone please make a fucking, we'll be the chips. So Karen
Andy
and
Fish is a British detective that's come to Los Angeles. Right. And then
he needs the help of two girl podcasters.
Chips. Where are the chips though?
Oh, because we're British cops.
We are?
Well, because we have, we're chips. We're highway patrol.
We're chips. Yeah. We're highway patrol.
Right.
All right.
Fish could be the band. Fish. Fish. The band Fish.
Fish and Chips.
Leads cops. Like, they're undercover narcs.
Yes.
And they go to their shows.
They narc on people at their own shows.
Yes.
They're pot cops.
Yeah.
Guys, here's the thing.
Oh, my God.
So, the British Highway Patrol shows up with this British reality show called Motorway Cops.
Fuck you.
They're already recording it.
That's so shitty.
No. They didn't know what the scenario was. They showed up on the scene like, well, this is a day in the life of these cops.
Okay.
Yeah, it's like that.
Okay.
So, the two twin women are standing on the side of the road talking to these cops. And the guys that were there first, on the scene first, are explaining to the British police who showed up with the camera crew. They're like, okay, so here's what happened. I guess they ran across the freeway. We don't really know what they're doing. One of them got hit, but she's okay. And blah, blah, blah. And they're explaining everything. And the two women are standing there while the cops are talking to each other. Mm-hmm. And then, as the camera's rolling, Ursula bolts out into the freeway and immediately gets hit by a truck.
Ugh.
And it is on, the truck is going 56 miles an hour. It's on camera. There's somebody that's kind of blocking it. So you don't see like the real awful part, but.
And to make it clear, she's not running, trying to cross. She's running to get hit by a car.
Well, there's no, it's just like that fucked up part in Bowfinger where Eddie Murphy has to run across the freeway for the like special effect. Do you remember that?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. You don't.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh,
well, here's the thing. It's not like Frogger where it's like one coming every couple of seconds.
Right.
It's like running onto the five now. Like there's no pause in the
breaks.
Traffic.
No.
Right. So she ran out onto a busy freeway intentionally.
Fuck.
And she does it, and everybody's like, it's really upsetting because it's all the cops going like, whoa, oh my God, or whatever. And they're immediately on to their things, calling for an ambulance, doing this. And while they're doing that, and one of them runs out to stop traffic, whatever, while they do that, then Sabine runs out into the freeway.
Fuck, dude.
Because they're, so it's the craziest thing to see, because nobody, of course, once the one goes, nobody goes, oh, make sure the other one doesn't go. They all totally. Go, holy shit, call an ambulance.
You would never, yeah. Who would do that?
So Ursula's legs, so Sabine runs out into the freeway and immediately gets hit by a Volkswagen Polo, which we don't have.
Those poor people driving those fucking cars.
Yes.
You've ruined their life.
Lorry driver, the truck driver that hit Ursula is on this. You can see the video footage, and it's the saddest thing because he just keeps going, she just ran out in front of us. That's not the accent, but it's something like that, where he says us instead of me. Aww. It's rough. And he's just like kind of staring off, like in total shock.
Oh my God.
But here's the thing. So Ursula's legs, she has compound fractures in her legs. Oh my God. The cop, I saw a special on it. And it's called like Madness on the Motorway or something like that. But it's really good. But
it's not as good as fish and chips.
It is no fish and chips. Never.
Never.
She is down, and this is so upsetting because she's bones are sticking out of her legs.
No,
you're not gonna get hit by a truck on the freeway and have it not be really gross and upsetting. But meanwhile, she's down, right? So the bottom half of her body is not moving and it's fucked up badly. But the top half of her, they go and they put one of those tinfoil marathon blankets on her. And they're like trying to talk to her. It's basically like, the ambulance is going to be here. Mm-hmm, you're okay. Mm-hmm. And she starts going, I know who you are. I know who you are. And they're like, just take it easy. It's okay.
Oh my God.
She says, I recognize you. I know you're not real.
Oh my God.
And the police are just saying, it's okay, stay down. Yeah, yeah. She's trying to get up. So it looks like a really hideous part of like Walking Dead, where like the zombie's been like attacked from the back, but they're still dragging themselves. Like, she's trying to push herself up, but her legs aren't going to move. Honey. And she's trying to like fight him. She's spitting at him.
How scary.
Yeah, she's freaking out. So her sister is, so that's Ursula. Sabina is also on the ground, and she looks like she's out. And there's a female cop next to her. And I think the second person is a woman who was maybe a passerby in a car. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure, but they're both sitting there and they're like, she's got one of those tinfoil blankets on her. And she, and Sabine is just eyes closed out. And then she comes to, and she like, almost like immediately gets up, and they're like, no, 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 don't move, don't move. And she's clearly like dazed, but she starts saying, they're going to steal your organs. She's yelling that over to Ursula.
Holy balls.
They're going to steal your organs. And then they're like, no, 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 stay down. And they're trying to hold her down. And she starts yelling, help, call the police. They're like, we are the police. It's okay. And so then they're thinking they're on drugs. They must be on some kind of drug, because now Sabine is up on her feet and she's trying to trying to get away. And they're like, you need to calm down. It's okay. Mm-hmm. She fucking jumps the rail and runs into the other side of the freeway.
Are you fucking kidding me?
I swear to God. Thank God that wasn't as busy on that side. And I think they may have stopped traffic. Like, traffic was totally stopped on this side where Ursula was laying.
So it's probably Lucky Lou's slowing down and shit.
Probably. And like maybe less traffic. I'm not sure. But anyway, she runs across. This cop has to run after her. And he's like, stop. What are you doing? Don't, you know, you're hurt. You're hurt. And she's like, and she basically turns on him like she's going to fist fight him.
Oh my God.
And she's like, and she's screaming, help, call the police. And they're like, we are the police. Like, it's crazy. So basically, it eventually takes six policemen to subdue Sabine.
Oh my God.
Six policemen to finally get her down and sedate, like they shoot her up. They meanwhile airlift Ursula out to the hospital. Mm-hmm. she was spitting at them the whole, like they were fighting the entire time. And the cops that subdued Sabine said that she had superhuman strength, that both of them did. So they're thinking they're on probably on PCP or something, like, you know, the drugs associated with
that we're taught as a kid are like,
yeah, you could like lift a car
totally.
Or do whatever you want.
Totally.
Which I just, the idea of whatever world that they were in, where they thought, what was happening?
Because so
they
scary.
Still don't know to this day the logic behind, and there's no explanation.
Wait, I was hoping you'd get to the explanation.
Well, I'm just going to spoiler alert for you right now.
No.
They've never explained it in court. When she finally went to court, all she would say is no comment. They have never explained any of it.
And there was no drugs in their system.
So, okay. They finally, the six people get her down, sedate her. She goes to the hospital and then goes directly into police custody in a place called Stoke-on-Trent. On May 19th, 2008, she is released from court. Sabina is released from court without a full psychiatric evaluation.
Oh, great.
Having pleaded guilty to trespass on the motorway and hitting a police officer, which she decked that female police officer. She punched her right in the face to get away from her. That's before she ran across for the third fucking time. Jeez. So the court sentenced her to one day in custody, which she'd already served. So she leaves and she begins to wander the streets of Stoke-on-Kent. Trying to find her sister in the hospital and carrying her possessions in a clear plastic bag. So she's just kind of now out on the street.
Let her go?
Yeah. So she's that night, two local guys who are walking a dog see her, and there she comes up and is very friendly. She's petting the dog. They're all talking. One of the men is a 54-year-old man named Glenn Hollingshead, who is a self-employed welder. He was had been a paramedic, and he was a former RAF worker. The other man was his friend Peter Malloy, and so they all start talking. And even though she's friendly, Sabina's acting super weird. So she does stuff like offers. She's asking them if they know the directions for any good bed and breakfasts, or any place to stay. She offers them cigarettes and then takes them back while they're smoking them. Like so this guy, Glenn Hollingshead, can tell there's something wrong with her.
This is the part that I'm like, did we do this one?
Did we?
Steven?
Well, this is the murder part.
Yeah.
So
we must have talked about this.
I'm sure we've talked about it, but I don't know.
I don't think we have.
I'd be a bummer. Well,
who cares? You're doing a great job.
Well, thanks. Thank you. I appreciate it. So they go back to his house because he's like, something's wrong with this lady.
Yeah.
And she's just wandering out on the street. So they go back to his house and she's basically saying, I need to find my sister. She's in a hospital. So mm-hmm. they start, I think they said they hang out that night. She was carrying multiple mobile phones and a laptop. She was constantly looking out the window. She was super paranoid. And Malloy assumes that she's run away from an abusive partner, the way she's acting. So they're like, you can stay here.
And she's probably all bandaged up and shit.
After being released. Right. I don't think when she was up and like basically trying to duke it out with this cop, she looked fine.
Fine. Oh
my Having God. Been hit by a car two times,
yeah.
She seemed fine and didn't break any bones apparently because she wasn't like held at the hospital.
Right.
So, okay. So anyway, when the friend leaves, he leaves at shortly before midnight and Sabina stays at the house. So the next morning, Hollingshead is calling local hospitals to find Ursula, to see where she is. And this would be 7:40 in the morning, he goes outside to ask his neighbor for tea bags. And the neighbor says, let me finish up what I'm doing and I'll come and bring him over. And so Glenn walks back into the house. Because the neighbor's washing his car. So he's like, when I finish, I'll bring him over. Mm-hmm. And then a minute after going inside, he staggers back outside the mm-hmm. house and saying to the neighbor, she stabbed me, and then collapses on the mm-hmm. ground. when he'd gone back into the house, Sabine had stabbed him 5 times with a kitchen knife. Oh, and he died from his injuries there. And she ran, and the neighbor calls 999, which is 911 in England. Not that I had to tell you that. Does this seem familiar?
No, I don't think we've done this one.
Okay. Because it seems familiar to me, but I know I've watched a full movie about this on YouTube. You can, and we all can if you want to after this. So essentially, she goes out of this house with a hammer in her hand and is hitting herself in the head with the hammer.
No!
Uh-huh. So every once in a while, periodically it says, from Wikipedia. So a passing motorist sees this, gets out of the car, and tries to grab the hammer away from her. And while they're wrestling, Sabina pulls a roof tile out of her,
the fuck?
Out of her pocket.
What the fuck?
You know, when you're wandering around town.
Like, this looks...
And you just put some stuff in your pocket. She pulls it out and hits him in the head with it. He's momentarily stunned and she runs away.
Oh my God.
But at this point, the paramedics from the 999 call have shown up and they see her and they chase her. And they end up pursuing her to Heron Cross, where she jumps off a 40-foot bridge onto the A50, which is another freeway or highway.
I can't stay away from.
I mean, they love it. They love freeways and highways. So that in that fall, she does break bones. So she is not superhuman. And she's taken to the hospital. And then when she's recovering there, she is put under arrest. And she's later discharged and then charged with murder. And so she goes to trial. They hold her, and this is the part that drives me crazy. She was supposed to go, she's charged with murder in September of 2008, the day she's discharged from the hospital. And the trial is scheduled for February of 2009, but they can't find her medical records from Sweden. So the trial is then pushed to September of 2009. So basically both of these sisters are kind of these mysteries. They can't find anything about them. They can't figure out what the deal is on them, which I think is like so fascinating. Obviously there's mental illness taking place anyway. There's something really serious going on.
Break from reality somehow.
Yeah. So she pleads guilty to manslaughter with diminished responsibility, but at no point during her interrogation or during the trial does she explain her actions. She only says no comment to extensive police questioning.
Jesus.
Both the prosecution and defense say that she was insane at the time of the killing, but sane during her trial. And the defense counsel claims that Sabine is the secondary sufferer of folie à deux, and that Ursula was the alpha in the situation, which is easy to say now that she's off with her crushed legs.
And it doesn't diminish your responsibility for what you've done.
Well, because Ursula had nothing to do with that stabbing.
Right.
She wasn't there for it. Totally. So it's kind of like, it's trying to say, well, she's the one that's just going along with everything. Right. And it's like, well, yeah, but Ursula wasn't there to tell her to do that. And obviously, way more is going on if that was her behavior when she was by herself.
Oh my God, I want to know.
I want to know all of it. Anyway, she's sentenced to 5 years in prison.
5 years?
She'd already spent 439 days in custody. So she ended up being eligible for a release in 2011.
Jesus.
So the judge says that, she has a low level of culpability for her actions. But basically that the killing was based on mental illness. She thought she was in danger. They thought they were in danger the whole time. They didn't know where they were when they were on the freeway, when all that stuff was taking place. They clearly had a break from reality and had some kind of a psychotic break because they were yelling at the police, call the police. And the police were repeatedly yelling back to them, we are the police.
Clearly.
And that just didn't seem to be breaking through in any way.
Yeah.
And so I don't think there's no explanation, but it didn't seem like that changed in any significant way by the time Glenn Hollingshead brought her into his apartment.
Poor guy.
Yeah, I mean, she was like, that's that kind of thing, though, of like, what are you doing? Like, what are you doing? This is it. Like, this is not a healthy person or an okay person. I mean, he was trying to be a good guy is what he was doing. Yeah. But there's a lot of danger in that of like just taking in a mentally ill person from the street is a dangerous thing, even if it's a woman.
Yeah. What was I going to ask? So did they get out? Are she out?
Yes, she was paroled.
And we don't know.
Hold on. Yeah. Yeah, she got out.
Where is she now?
I don't know.
I'm scared. I'm scared now.
The brother of Glenn... Hollingshead, the guy that got stabbed, Hollingshead, basically said that he doesn't blame her because he clearly understands that she was her mental state. She probably thought that was something she needed to do, but he blames that system that just released her into the street with a plastic bag going like, well, good luck. You clearly ran across the freeway 3 times, but now you're just on your own.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Without the person you've been with. So it's like, we don't know if you, oh my God.
But so here's the thing that I want to know. And like, let's just put aside. So, because there weren't drugs in their system. Mm-hmm. So all their theories of like they're on PCP or this, none of that proved out. And I think the reason it's vague here and hopefully there's other people that know the details and we would love to hear that. I would love to hear them. But like, the idea that they're not on drugs, clearly there's some kind of a psychosis taking place, but not so much that they then get put into any kind of like that Sabine gets put into any kind of a mental hospital.
They should have been. What is it? 5150 when they can hold you for being crazy for somebody.
And like, what more do you need than people running across the freeway 3 times?
Yeah. You're not hurt. Get out of here.
Right. It's very strange. It doesn't make a ton of sense, but for me, I want to know. So, one of the things they said they were carrying were a whole bunch of cell phones in those bags that they didn't want people to see. But the idea that they thought people wanted to take their organs, like they thought they were being chased.
Yeah.
They thought they needed a bunch of cell phones. They couldn't show them to people. They like that idea. It's like a, you know, paranoid delusion or whatever, but like, what was the world that they were in? I would just be so fascinated to know the details of what they thought was happening.
It's one of those like mysteries of like, you know, like Tam and Shude, that guy, you know, it's like, will we ever know? I really want to know. Maybe the answer someday will be like the girls in Austin who got killed at the
yogurt shop
murders. Like, I want to know so bad.
Yeah.
And we might never know, which is so frustrating.
I feel like I feel like I should have done like more back end research, but for me, the fascinating part is that it's the stabbing is an insane like ending.
Totally.
And so terrible and so incredibly tragic. But like, what was happening on that freeway is so crazy.
Yeah.
And that to me, I got all caught up in that. And the video, I mean, watching that video,
it
was just
you watched it?
I did. Because it's like, it was the whole story.
Yeah, totally. I understand.
It's crazy though. It doesn't, it like your mind can't comprehend it because it's a person running into traffic.
No, I can't. Yeah.
It's crazy.
Wow.
Really, really crazy. I want to know also if Ursula being separate because they were separated, if anybody like snapped out of it and then was like, oh, this is, we were.
I mean, but you can't blame it on that. You can't like, it's not real. The fucking, the connection that they had that made them do this. You know what I mean? Like they're just both crazy.
Right. But it's real to them. I'm sorry.
They're both mentally ill. Yes. But separately, they're mentally ill. It's not like one is causing the other one.
Right. Although that's kind of like the...
what they say happens.
Yes, because the other... the Gibbons sisters, who were those who were those twins who lived in Wales, and they grew up, they were like some of the only black people in Wales. So they grew up and they were terribly bullied and abused. So they didn't talk to anybody but each other, and they had a secret language. Mm-hmm. that, so this is basically, it's the same thing.
Yeah.
They had a thing where when they were in jail, because they started lighting fires. Mm-hmm. So they went to jail. They went to a mental hospital because they didn't talk to anybody and they yeah. only talked to each other. But they would do a thing where they would find one standing frozen in a certain pose in her cell. And they would go to the other cell on the other side of the jail and she would be standing in the exact same pose.
Oh my fucking God. Oh my God.
So there is something to yeah. like the mental connection of twins.
I know.
There's something there. Because like, how did that happen?
Yeah.
Unless it was like, oh, every day we do this thing.
Right, at this time.
Maybe.
I don't know. Or is that, you know, someone exaggerating at the mental hospital told someone that and that got a little bigger and bigger and bigger. Sure.
Like it's its own creepypasta?
Yeah.
Well, because, but every reporter, there was a reporter that went and spent time with them who said they were just incredibly eerie. You know, it's like two yeah. people that don't feel the need to talk, who would just sit there that also are like, you know, twins. And one of them finally said to that reporter, the only way I'm getting out of here is if one of us dies. And then one did die of an expanded heart. Something like kind mm-hmm. of for no reason, mm-hmm. like in a way where it's just one died and then the other got out.
And she lived a normal life, right? Uh-huh.
If you or at least she's got out and right. is living her life outside a mental hospital.
If you could be a twin, would you be a twin?
Ooh.
I used to want to be when I was a kid.
You what?
I wanted to be when I was a kid.
I mean, I think it'd be fun. I bet it would be hard to like look at yourself all the time.
Part of me was just like, I kind of want to know what I look like uh-huh. objectively. You know what I mean?
Yes.
And do you ever like look at photos and be like, okay, if I saw that girl, what would I think? I don't know.
I mean, the funny thing to me is that I can take such insanely bad pictures mm-hmm. and I can take really good me pictures. Too. And then it's like, well, what is the, I guess it's just a happy medium and that's how it is with everybody.
It's so weird that, yeah. Am I going to get, yeah. Everything. So what if you and I start fucking, what is it called?
Morphing into each other?
Follying.
Folly a doing?
Yes.
Let's do that on the road.
Okay.
That'd be kind of fun.
It'd be fun.
It'd be fun to just, oh, run and just get your.
Yeah. Like, you make my decisions for me, please. I'm done making decisions.
Yeah. My decision is to pull someone's eyes out. Sorry.
Sorry. My decision is to run into the freeway. All right. I love when I like think of a like when I'm like, what murder should I do? And then I'm like, oh yeah, I've fucking been fascinated by this one for years. I'm going to do it. You know, when it's like not one you just randomly find.
Yeah.
So Mel Ignato is a 50-year-old man. He's a divorced father of three grown kids. And Brenda Sue Schaefer is 36. She's a medical assistant and they had been in a relationship for 2 years and engaged. And then in 1988, Schaefer decides to break it off. And she tells a friend that Mel was sexually abusive. And by all accounts, everyone says he's controlling and he's a sadistic motherfucker, is what I wrote. Yeah. So Brenda goes missing after deciding to break it off with Mel. And her car is found on the highway, real close to her home, close enough that if it had broken down, she could have walked home. It had been broken into, the radio stolen, and family and police, though, quickly suspect Mel in the disappearance. But they're unable to locate any witnesses or physical evidence linking him, and they can't find Brenda, her body. So they interview him to clear his name, so he can clear his name by testifying before a grand jury. And randomly he mentions the name of his ex-girlfriend of 10 years, Marianne Shore, which randomly brings her into the investigation for the first time. They hadn't even known it, like she wasn't on their radar at all. So the police interview Marianne, and eventually she confesses to helping plan the murder of Brenda.
Hmm.
And of course, out of that, she gets a plea bargain that she'll only get charged with tampering with evidence. So Marianne tells police that Mel had convinced her to help him plan and carry out Brenda's murder. They had spent several weeks making extensive preparations for Brenda's murder, including quote, scream testing Marianne's house.
Oof.
And digging a grave in the woods behind her house. Mel even keeps a checklist of the things he was going to do to Brenda on the night he killed her. And these photos of her, you know, I watched a couple episodes of all these shows, and he looks like, you know, he's 50 years old. He looks like a dad. He looks like a normal dude, normal 80s dad. She's 36, and she's this pretty, you know, sweet-looking girl. A fucking Sweet Honesty ad, you know?
And it's his girlfriend?
They're engaged. They were together for 2 years. She had been divorced, and he's kind of like showering her with gifts, and it just gets weirder and weirder, though. And her family says in the beginning, like, we just didn't understand why she was with him at all, and it didn't trust him from the beginning. But I think, you know, he was a sociopath, so he was fucking charming at first.
Yeah. He made her feel special.
Right. So on September 23rd, 1988, Marianne tells the police that Mel lures Brenda to the house under the guise of her returning some jewelry that had belonged to Mel that I think he must have bought her. And when Brenda gets in the house, Mel pulls a gun and locks the door. And Marianne is there this whole time.
Ugh.
He forces her to strip, then blindfolds, gags, and binds her. And he uses the list of all the things he was going to do to her and proceeds to go down the list doing each of them. He ties her to a coffee table and he rapes, sodomizes, and beats her, all the while having Marianne take photos of what's going on.
What the fuck?
What in the fuck? This is someone you were with for 2 years. Okay. You have grown children. Like, who the fuck?
Yeah.
Let's see. Marianne says she never joined in. She just took photos.
Oh. Yeah, right. Oh, okay, Marianne.
Oh, yeah. Everything's fine then.
Okay. You just took the photos of a vicious attack.
He then...
That's even grosser. I know. It's even grosser.
Yeah.
It's not grosser.
See that, you know? Like,
You're standing by taking photos? Get out, lady.
I can't even watch a fucking bar fight. Like,
I love a bar fight.
Do you?
I love it. I love it.
What about it?
I just like, it's a very, it's like watching a tension. It's from going to college in Sacramento. They happened all the time. Basically, bars would clear out and then people would just stand around watching people fight until the cops came. And then girls would like cry and like, you know.
Drunk girls crying.
Stop it! And you'd be like, if you just be quiet, it'll be over faster and then we'll all go home. It's my favorite. It's just like male. It's you know, 80s male expression.
Macho.
They're just like, I'm not a football player and I'm not a frat boy. I don't know what to do.
I'm all pent up with my fucking testosterone and anger and
shit. And my feeling. I have all these feelings and I'm not allowed to have them. And I listen to a lot of Boston. So here, I'm going to punch you right in the face.
I saw a couple of vicious fights before. So like, I feel like I have this aversion to them.
Because they were too awful?
Yeah. I don't like... I can't look.
But I love it.
That's so amazing. I love that. Anyways, back to the horror.
Okay.
She's taking photos, says she never joins in. Mel then takes Brenda back to the back bedroom and kills her by putting a rag soaked in chloroform over her mouth until she dies. Poor fucking baby. And then Marianne helps Mel cover up the murder by including burying Brenda in a hole they dug behind the house. So they bury her.
Marianne.
So after her admission, 14 months after Brenda's disappearance, Marianne leads the investigators to the gravesite. They find Brenda's badly decomposed body buried there. Of course, there's no DNA evidence since the body had been decomposed, but that's in 1988. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like now they could have... 14 months isn't that long to be buried, right?
Oh, I feel like these days they could get it in so many ways.
Totally.
Yeah. But back then it was like, yeah.
Yeah.
Did totally different story.
Yes. So the investigators convinced Marianne to wear a wire to talk to Mel, and she tells them the FBI is hounding her. She's afraid the property behind her house is going to be sold and developed. And he's on the tape berating her for letting the FBI, quote, rattle her. And told her that he didn't care if they dug up the whole property because, quote, that place we dug is not shallow.
Hmm.
So based on this recording, as well as a little physical evidence, from his home. Prosecutors charge Mel Ignato with the murder in 1991. And then, okay, let's see. So during one of the recorded conversations, when Mel says that place we dug is not shallow, he says, besides that one area right by where that site is, does not have any trees by it. The defense attorney convinced the jury that Mel said safe and not site. And, so it led the jurors to conclude that the discussion involved burying a safe, not a body. Oh. So instead of sight, they thought it would, they convinced the jury that it was safe. Like they fucking buried a safe.
But didn't Marianne already tell them everything they needed to know?
Well, so Marianne, testifies. She's a star witness, but she dresses like skimpy, laughs the whole time during her testimony. And they argue, the defense argues that Marianne killed Brenda, not Mel. And so him saying that thing about a safe doesn't implicate him in the murder.
Whoa.
Yeah. So, and she had been convicted of fraud before. And so her credibility is totally undermined. In the eyes.
Undermound.
That was a joke. I knew it wasn't that. Steven, don't write that down. Steven, I see you writing that down.
Undermound.
That's my new word. I wrote her, all of which undermines her credibility in the eyes of the stupid idiot jury. Then I said the stupid idiot jury found Mel Ignato not guilty on all 7 counts.
Whoa.
Yep. Then the judge, Martin Johnstone, he's so embarrassed by the verdict that he writes a letter of apology to the Schaefer family saying, if it was just me and not a jury, I would have fucking put this guy away forever, which is like pretty amazing.
Yeah.
And then an interesting random fact. So this took place like December 21st or so. And it turns out that the closer a trial takes place to Christmas, juries are more likely to acquit.
That makes sense.
Isn't that fucked up?
Yeah.
Is it because they want to get the fuck out of trial, or is it because they have like, they have feelings of, you know, when you get all fuzzy and cozy during the holidays and you're like, love and family and stuff.
Yeah. I bet it's a bit of both depending on the personality, but it's like normally where you wouldn't have either at play.
Yeah.
You have now both at play.
Right.
So whether it's the person that's like, but I just watched this Hallmark movie about everyone giving people a second chance.
Yeah. Fuck. So and like in the fucking courtroom, there's like a Christmas tree in the corner.
And they're like, people are looking over there like, I've got to go shopping now.
They put a fucking Santa hat on Mel. While he's sitting at
stop
the... No,
it.
I'm just saying that's what they should do.
They bake cookies, so it just smells right. Nice.
Immediate mistrial. They just spray air freshener that smells like baked cookies.
Spray cinnamon glade. Don't you love it? Okay, innocent.
Okay, so 6 months later... Okay, then, so he's out, this motherfucker. 6 months later, he sells his house because he needs funds to pay for his legal bills. And the house is like, he's not a fucking trashy person. He has a beautiful house. He looks like a normal guy.
I argue he is a trashy person.
I mean, clearly. You know what I mean? Like, you wouldn't know. Like, when I was like researching it, I was like, oh, I thought of like Making a Murderer dude.
Yes, right.
Who just like lives on a, you know, farm or whatever. No, it's like a lovely Tudor house. And he is your fucking dad's best friend.
Yep.
In the 80s, you know? So he sells the house. He needs to pay for the legal bills. So a carpenter is laying, a carpet layer is working on the house. He pulls up a length of carpet in the hallway. Underneath that carpet is a floor vent. Inside that floor vent is a plastic bag taped to the inside of the vent.
Ooh.
Inside the bag is the jewelry that Brenda had brought over the night of, as well as 3 rolls of undeveloped film.
Oh, shit. And he grabbed that bag and ran.
Nope, because he didn't own the fucking house anymore. Someone else owned it. Oh, you mean the guy, the carpet layer.
The carpenter.
Yes, he did.
Okay, good. Okay.
Yeah,
Then he very silently, yeah. he nailed in some wood and covered that
He
vent.
Opened all the, and he exposed the film. Anyways, that's the end of my story.
The end, bye.
Yeah, so the fucking cops get those 3 rolls of film developed. It's like 180 photos of start to finish Marianne's, I mean, Brenda's torture and murder.
Taken by Marianne.
So everything she said was fucking
done
true.
By Mel. Yes. Holy
Well, Mel's face isn't in the film, but his body hair patterns
fucking
and moles
Marianne.
Match it perfectly.
Oh, good. Okay.
And match her story.
Yes.
Like,
okay.
She wasn't fucking lying. She's a fucking monster.
Yes.
But she wasn't lying. Hey, guess what, Karen?
What?
Ever heard of Double Jeopardy?
I sure have.
Oh, well, here it is to ruin your night.
Yep.
Because of Double Jeopardy, Mel can't be retried for Brenda's murder. He's brought to trial for perjury based on his grand jury testimony, because it's like all they could fucking do. He knew he couldn't be retried for murder, so he confesses in court at his perjury trial to the whole fucking thing. He turns to Schaefer, to Brenda's brothers, and says, but she died peacefully. Yeah. He gets an 8-year sentence for perjury, serves 5 of those years, credit for 2 years that he was served, and another year off for good behavior. Can we look at your whole life of behavior and know that you murdered someone, and then so you fucking not getting in a fight at the mess hall doesn't get time off your fucking sentence?
You'd think.
One would think. Excuse me. So, sentenced. Okay, good behavior. He's out. He gets another thing, another charge, another year, another thing for perjury, a different thing.
So they're still going after him in whatever way they can.
Yeah.
Like they do on Law and Order.
Yeah.
Like, we'll get him for good.
Right. So he's another trial for perjury, 9 years for that, released from prison for the second time in December 2006. He goes home to Louisville, living at home 4 miles from the house where he murdered Brenda.
Whoa.
2 years later, September 1st, 2008, Mel allegedly falls off a ladder, cuts his arm on a glass coffee table, again, the coffee table,
right,
slowly bleeds to death. Yay.
What?
He's 70 years old.
Okay. I'm sorry. So it's a ladder inside the house.
I don't know if it's a ladder, but he's like hanging a painting he's on a standing
doing
on a thing.
Something. Got
yeah.
it.
Falls off of it. And some places say he breaks through the glass and cuts his arm. Some say his head, but either way, like, there was like blood marks where he like climbed around the house and like couldn't. And so people are like, did he really fall? Like,
or did someone like basically go smash his head into a glass coffee table?
Into a coffee table, which is the same thing he fucking tied Brenda to when she came over. Somewhere I said it's the same coffee table, but I don't think that's true.
And that would be.
Yeah.
And well, that would mean he would put that coffee table into storage.
But it wasn't his coffee table to begin with. It was Marianne's house.
Okay.
Although, I think he owned it. I don't know, something. So he's fucked. This piece of shit is dead at 70 in 2008. Marianne served 3 years of a 5-year sentence for,
bad photography.
yes.
The worst.
Dies from cancer in a hospice at age 54.
Whoa. That's young.
Yeah.
That's her body turned on herself.
Yeah.
They were like, we're shutting this shit down.
Well, she's a monster. Like, if you watch her talking and see her, she's a monster.
I don't understand. Like, he's a 15-year-old man dating a 36-year-old or 34-year-old. Mm-hmm. Why doesn't he just break up with her? Why does he have to kill her? Why does he have to, like, rape her and demean her? And what's the deal?
In the worst way possible. And he planned it for weeks. Like, he wanted to do this so badly to her. And it was only 2 years. I mean, I just don't understand.
He's a beast. That's crazy.
They went back and interviewed like ex-girlfriends, his ex-wife, and by all accounts, he's a sexual sadist.
Ugh.
He's a fucking monster. Like, it's surprising that this is the first time he did that, you know?
Yeah.
Especially because at 50, he kills the first one, you know?
Yeah.
And he had tortured his other girlfriends like this before, and they all broke up with him, or they ended the relationship somehow.
Or there's just ones that they don't know about.
Yeah.
Also, it actually explains Marianne a little bit more, because of how, like, weird Svengali-ish those types of men can be, where suddenly you're doing things that you would never do, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I don't know her. No, we've talked a lot of shit about Marianne, but I'm just saying if she's a victim too in that way, where it's just one more person in his weird chain of the way he uses women and what he does to women.
Pits them against each other.
Yes. Where it's just like, well, you're the special one, so hold this camera. I mean, like, God, it's just...
Or she's terrified of him because she's had 10 years of fucking psychological and physical abuse from him as well, and sexual abuse. That, you know, she was with him for 10 years.
Yeah. She's so maybe, like, in so deep.
And, yeah.
And brainwashed. And,
brainwashed, PTSD. Ugh. It's so ugly.
That's gross.
I wish I had a positive spin on it at the end, but...
No, I don't think you can spin that one.
There ain't one.
There, not that one.
Poor Brenda.
Yeah, that's awful.
Yeah. We have a murder from a friend. Should we do Kurt's?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So, okay.
We haven't done a friend hometown murder in a while.
Yeah. And we have a friend... Kurt Braunohler, who I'm sure you guys know, he's a hilarious comedian and actor.
And he called one in.
He called one in. He has a special. His comedy special is coming out this Friday on Comedy Central at midnight. He also has a podcast on Audible with his wife, Lauren, who's a good friend of mine, called Wedlock, coming out in April. So check those out. I haven't listened to this. Let's hear Kurt's. Okay.
Hey, it's Kurt. So here's my murder story. This was a teacher that taught at my high school, Christian Brothers Academy. It sounds very fancy, but it wasn't really fancy. It was just a all-boys Catholic school in Lincroft, New Jersey. He was the Latin teacher a few years after I stopped going there. But the Latin teachers historically had been lunatics. The Latin teacher that was there when I was there was a monk, like a brother. Most of the teachers were brothers, and they were all like weirdos. But he was like the weirdest of the weirdos. He wouldn't allow you to have a pen in class or hold a pen. And when he also would just always constantly talk about his niece's little cupcake breasts. I'm not kidding. He was obsessed about the meat. I heard many times about her little cupcake breasts. He was taken out of the position of being a Latin teacher because a kid in the class was holding a pen, and so he punched him in the mouth, and then they're like, okay, you don't get to teach anymore. And then that was taken over by my good friend Steve, who was a Latin teacher for a little while. He couldn't take it. It drove him crazy. He stopped teaching and went to live in Italy to become a stone sculptor, a marble stone sculptor, and that's when this guy Matt, took over as the Latin teacher. The teaching Latin at Christian Brothers Academy drove him so crazy that he just started getting into smoking crack. Apparently in the afternoons in a place that my aunt used to live called Ocean Grove. And Ocean Grove is a Christian community, so Christian that in the 80s, on Sunday, they would close off the town to cars. Because apparently Jesus doesn't like you to drive a car on Sunday. And so my aunt used to live there, and she used to babysit me, and she's since become a nun. So I'm just trying to express to you how Christian and Catholic this whole situation is. This guy works at Christian Brothers Academy. He's smoking crack with a woman whose last name is Weed. So Ms. Weed and this guy Matt are smoking crack together on a Sunday afternoon. And then around 6:30 p.m. they get into an argument. He murders her with a knife. He stabs her 9 times in the neck after, I guess, there was also some beating involved. It's very horrific. And then he just walked out down the street to Ocean Grove. So mere minutes after people called the cops because they heard him screaming, they just found him wandering down the streets of this Christian town, just bloody, having murdered this woman that he just loved to smoke crack with on a Sunday afternoon. This was at 6:30 p.m. So whenever they started smoking crack, I have no idea. But that's what my high school would do to you.
Jesus.
That's insanity.
Is it weird that I never want to hang out with Kurt again because I'm terrified?
I love the visual of a guy covered in blood walking through a town where you're not allowed to drive on the weekends.
It sounds like a Twilight Zone town.
Yes.
That's so perfect that then a guy suddenly the image of the opposite of that walking through town.
Also, what was driving people so crazy about that Latin class?
It's fucking Latin, man. There's some like
devil shit
in there.
It's devilish.
I can't believe they taught it there.
Please watch Kurt Braunohler's special Trust Me, which airs this Friday, March 3rd at midnight on Comedy Central.
Yeah.
Well, that was quite the episode.
That was dark.
That one had something for everybody, I think.
Yeah. Mostly murder, if everyone wanted murder.
Yeah. Oh, wait. Let's say something good.
Okay. You go first.
Okay. Well, mine is really big, but I also can't super get into detail about it, but I'll just say this. I had probably 3-year problem get resolved on Friday afternoon that has caused me so much stress and panic and shame. And it's a financial thing that's boring in detail, but I will tell you this. If you're in a place where you are fucked financially and you're worried and you're scared, it will end. And I swear to God, I've been in this place before, but this was like a way, way, way bigger version. And it really felt hopeless at times. And it's over. And part of the reason it's over is because of this podcast. And I'm so grateful that we are doing it and that we have it. It means the world to me. Yeah, I feel crazy lucky that we actually get to do this as a job.
Me too.
It's so fun. And also just the fact that now this, truly, it's like a 500-pound weight has been taken off my shoulders.
I'm so happy for you.
It's really quite nice.
I had no idea how rough it was until it ended and you told me.
I know. I couldn't tell anybody about it. That's so
silly. Please tell me. I can handle fucked up shit.
Well, yeah. Now I know. It's just that thing where I think everybody has it, some version of it where it's like the problem where you think this means some terrible thing about you.
Shame around it.
Yeah. Or just like it's failure. It's I failed and now everyone's going to know I failed.
Right.
But guess what? Everybody fails.
Yeah.
Everybody fails on all different levels every day. And we're all trying to make ourselves feel better about it. So don't beat yourself up and just know the end. There's always a silver lining. There was always light at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah. I had in the same kind of idea of that, what you just said, I had after going to therapy since I was a child, like around 5, I had the most amazing session today of I think ever. And she said to me halfway through, I know you're an atheist, Georgia, but you worship at the altar of doubt. And it fucking blew my mind. Mm-hmm. And so we're working on that now and how to get past doubt. And it was this switch today that it made me hopeful for the first time in a long time.
When I met you, when we were at Jones on Third.
Today,
you absolutely seem different.
Really?
Yes. Well, you had, first of all, the big smile because somebody was telling you a story.
About murder.
There was a murder story happening when I arrived. But then also, yeah, just that kind of, you had almost like the, eyes of like wide-eyed wonder kind of thing of like, oh my God, you can look at the world in a different way.
It felt, and so because of that, I want to say like, and I know it's so, people try to find therapists and they're new at it and they're like, this didn't work for me or I didn't like this person. And it just is a lifetime of it. And I've had so many fucking therapists in my life and a handful have been really good.
Yeah.
And the one I have luckily is right now is amazing. And you just have to
keep trying
because you'll find it.
It is almost a little bit like dating. It has to be a person that you want to spend that time with, that you want to barf all your worst stuff onto.
Yeah. That still
doesn't make you feel bad.
No.
They can't make you feel bad.
No. And this is the first time she's ever said something straight up to me like that. And I fucking appreciate it so much. And this is after a year of getting to know me. And that was just life changing.
Yeah. That's a good thing to realize and understand there's options.
Yeah. Yeah. And fuck, man, I feel lucky too for this podcast. I can't believe this, my life. I'm so...
We're pretty lucky.
So lucky.
Knock on wood.
Veneer. Wood.
All of us. Thank you, Stephen. Thanks, Stephen. Thank you so much for really bringing us together and making this podcast happen.
Part of this.
Oh, thank you.
Stephen Ray Morris of the Percast.
It's like turning red.
Blushing.
Stephen, you can't be here if you can't take a compliment.
I'm learning.
Berating Stephen about not taking our compliment.
It's better if I yell at you, right? Yeah. Than compliment. Yeah,
this feels like home. Yay. Well, thanks.
I get it.
Thanks for joining us, you guys, and listening and
Participating.
Yeah.
And guess what?
What? He knows already.
I know. You're jumping your line.
Yeah, Elvis.
Stay sexy.
And don't get murdered. Elvis, you want a cookie?
Bye.